I think it's that time of the evening.
It is.
It is.
Hi, I'm Simon Mercip, and this is Crave. Welcome. This is the video cast and podcast dedicated to music and
mostly.
To film, mostly, yep. But actually to anything which has been entertaining me and Steve McCabe lately.
Yeah, we're not fussy. We'll tackle anything. Now, this last week we focused on film primarily, didn't we?
Yeah.
It was Oscars season and all the rest. We will come back to that.
We shall.
We will come back to that. But this week, it's mostly music, isn't it?
It is. Steve and I both caught that there was the first Auckland show of... You'd have to say one of the big heavy-hitting bands of the 1970s, the Eagles.
Well, isn't their greatest hits album one of the biggest-selling albums
I think it
of
is.
All time?
Of
yes.
All, yeah, yeah. Now, if you've lately caught our website, cravepodcast.com, you may have noted that Steve and I didn't quite, not quite see eye to eye on the Eagles, so we're looking forward to seeing where that conversation goes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, also...
Yes.
We've been to concerts separately as well.
I know.
Yes, I mean we try and double date as far as possible. But yeah, sometimes we can't always get to them. So I've been going back to my Salford roots.
Yes,
going back to, and it's been the 1990s all over again, the 1980s, and it's been fantastic. Really, been the Manchester days with the Happy Mondays.
I'm looking forward to hearing about that. I don't know much about them, but I know that they're from your neck of the woods.
Oh yes.
Yes.
Oh,
okay.
Good lads.
And I caught a show of a bloke whose name I'd heard, I guess, for many years. But really never, to be brutally honest, bothered to find out too much about him. I regret that. His name's John Prine.
Mm-hmm.
He's 72 now.
Yes.
And he's country, folk, bluesy singer, writes nice songs, had a fantastic band. I caught a show in Auckland at the Bruce Mason Theatre, and I'll tell you about that a bit
Looking
later.
Looking forward
too.
To that, because
yeah.
I know exactly that much about John Prine. I shall share the extent of my knowledge very, very shortly.
Okay.
But let's start with the single heaviest of heavy hitters that we've seen in quite some time. This is the Eagles, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, I mean, you've commented here, hit songs galore. And the thing is, when you saw the set list, and they started just cranking them out, you're realising, oh, yeah. I just think there's more and more. Except for that sort of lull.
Yeah.
In the middle, yeah? So you got a band who have had numerous lineup changes.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, not from choice.
No.
That would be Glenn Frey.
Yes.
Who's now got his little boy Deacon stepping in for him. And you've got a core in the band who are in their 70s.
That's right. So Joe Walsh,
yep.
Timothy B. Schmidt, Don Henley. Oh, actually, I think they're all about 71, I think it is.
They're all there.
And then you've got a couple of others who've been around not so long, but still
long,
a little bit. You'd still call them veterans. And then there's some other... A band that had a five-piece horn set that came on.
They were cool.
Extra percussion, piano, keyboard. So it was a pretty full sound.
It was.
The question is, okay, were they any good? And here's the question.
Go on, refine
that question.
Yeah, go on.
When you have a band which has been around for a long time, the first thing that springs to my mind is, well, can they still play? You know, can they play? Yeah. Can they play music?
No, I mean,
can
they sing? That's a fair question. I saw the Rolling Stones 4 years ago, five years ago.
Yeah.
And when I saw Keith Richards, I came away thinking, no, he can't anymore.
Well, you are.
So that's actually a valid question when you're dealing with
fellas. Can they play? Song. Can they sing? And are they actually, you know, still a cohesive musical force?
Yes.
And I think they are. They're still a very professional, you might say, too professional outfit who turned out songs pretty much as you remember them on the radio.
Oh, yeah.
All those years ago.
Yeah. And you see, that was part of the problem.
Right.
That was part of the problem. So, as is my first three songs were spent behind a camera lens.
Right.
And now we've got the Red Hot Chili Peppers coming to Auckland on Friday. We will be there to cover the show, don't you worry. So we've got and you know that's going to be an amazing show to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be people bouncing around the stage. It's going to be very dynamic, very exciting. It's going to be great fun. For the first two songs, you had six blokes just lined up, evenly spaced, standing in front of microphone stands, acoustic guitars, arms going up and down in unison like that. And that was the music, not just the show. That's basically what the music was. It was the musical equivalent of a nice, comfortable pair of slippers and a pipe.
Okay, that's true. But that's what they were.
That's what they were sometimes.
Yes, so as you put in your review, and I'm not going to disagree with this part of it, it was almost like watching, you know, two or three bands at one time.
Yes.
There was that band that turned out those very middle-of-the-road hits like Take It Easy and
I mean, yeah, the clue is in the title, isn't it?
Yeah, peaceful, easy feeling. Yeah.
I mean, the entire music is one big peaceful, easy feeling, isn't it? That's the whole problem with it.
Yeah, so... Well,
and yeah, I mean, smatter those here and there through the set, but you've got songs like All 55. So I
Which wasn't one of the songs, was it?
No, it was a Tom Waits cover.
Yeah.
And Tom Waits said that it was antiseptic, I think was his word. and so, okay, I mean, yeah, peaceful, easy feeling. I mean, Take It Easy is actually quite a decent song.
Yeah.
Even though one of the most disappointing lyrics. It's like, what a fine sign to see. It's a girl.
Yeah. I mean,
seriously, you guys, get out a bit more, please. But some good songs. But when they're doing other people's slow numbers, you have to wonder why that was necessary. And so, for my money, there's a big swathe in the middle of the show where it dragged. Where, like you say, it sounded a lot like what was on the record. I mean, the vocal harmonies were... I mean, it sounded like they'd auto-tuned themselves. They were immaculate.
Yeah. So their very first song, they hit the ground running, didn't they? It was a song called Seven Bridges. And
yes.
They start off with all their voices.
Yes.
Bang, straight into it.
Oh, it was immaculate.
Yeah, it is immaculate. And maybe that's both the good and the bad of it. That it's... For the nostalgia buffs out there, it hits all the marks. But it doesn't... maybe feel as fresh and vibrant as that band who's been working on the material
it kind of felt refreshing. It felt robotic almost, even down to like the way that they were sort of congratulating each other.
Oh, that was,
it just felt just too slick and polished and rehearsed and it was slick, it was polished,
but they were a slick band, they were a polished band, so in a way they were true to who they were. I didn't think that was them being other than I would have expected.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, yeah, you have to accept that you will get a peaceful, easy feeling when you go to an Eagles concert. But let's talk about the other band, because the other band was better. The other band was a band that Joe Walsh was leading, right?
Yes.
Now, when you got, like, Timothy B. Schmidt, after Vince Gill finishes singing, he goes, man, he sure knows how to sing. And you go, seriously? This is clanging. And they're going, we're so glad to be in your beautiful country. And I'm thinking to myself, now, which country is that again? You haven't actually named it. So it all just felt a little bit scripted, a little bit like, you know, going through the motions. But then Joe Walsh. The years have not been kind.
So Joe Walsh, when you say the years have not been kind, we should just expand on that a little bit, because I thought... He was quite stooped over when he was playing guitar. When he's singing, his mouth is a little bit lopsided a bit.
Yep.
The voice, he was belting it out, but it was at times, I wasn't quite sure where the voice was going to go. And the guitar playing...
Have you got like Don Henley singing? You've got any of the others? The voices were immaculate.
Yeah.
His wasn't.
It wasn't, but it was raw and rough.
Yes.
And it felt live.
Yes.
And you felt like anything could happen.
Yes. And when he was playing guitar,
yes,
he was good, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was good, and it made you feel like this wasn't an over rehearsed, polished piece of whatever word you want to insert there.
So when he's doing songs like Life in the Fast Lane,
yes,
which is, I mean, it's an up tempo rocky number, but it's still very very polished and very slick and very very radio friendly on record.
Yeah.
I felt live, it actually had a bit more of an edge than the recorded versions did, and I really like that.
Yeah,
and
same with Life's Been Good.
Oh yes,
and Rocky Mountain Way. All those classic Joe Walsh songs—they sounded great.
They did. Didn't they?
Yeah.
So that's the band I really, really enjoyed. And when they started playing Heartache Tonight, and that's fine. I mean, the Spark Arena, as full as I've ever seen it.
Yeah.
Totally seated on the floor, and that was the song when people finally got up and started dancing.
Yeah,
badly.
That's true. I just wanted to. There was this thing about the polished aspect of the other band you mentioned. Remember early on in the concert that you get that sort of message you hear at many concerts.
Yeah.
Please, over the louder speaker system, please no photographs and no videos.
Oh right, this is Don Henley, isn't it?
But Don Henley saw someone and he actually called them out.
Yes, he did.
And he said, "Look, put that away.
Yeah,
this is for now.
Yes,
be present."
Yep.
Eyeballs, memory.
No screens. Yes.
And I thought that was, could have been a bit petulant or a bit sort of snarky, but it kind of worked. And it did make me think that at the very least, even though you might have thought it was too polished, it mattered to them that it was polished, because that's what they wanted to do.
Well, I would say along with Joe Walsh, Henley was a standout of the evening.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, when he was drumming,
yes,
he was sort of leaning. Also, he's just sort of doing the rim taps on the snare drum. He's sort of leaning in. I was like, he's gonna fall into his high hat any second now. He looks a little bit too laid back himself. But like I say, when he started playing Heartache Tonight, he was really pounding out the bass drum.
Yeah,
that was good.
I've got a bit of a conspiracy theory, though.
Oh.
Well,
but no one's listening.
No, no. Well, just as that middle of the road country stuff was polished, and is it possible that Joe Walsh, who has a reputation as the clown prince of rock, as rough and raw as he seemed, that was actually just as practiced?
You know, quite possibly.
Here's a little a sidebar to that.
Ooh,
you very cleverly, as you were in the photographer's area,
snapped
a photograph of the set list.
I did, yes, from the mixing decks, yes.
Now, at the very end, you had to leave just a couple of songs before the end. At the end of the song, the concert, it looks like the concert's over.
Yeah.
The band members at the back of stage start to walk off.
Oh, yeah.
But Henley seems to think he's had a change of mind. He goes over to the band members at the front of the stage and he has whispers in their ear. He gets them all together, a little bit of conversation. Then they call the other members back.
Right.
And they do the long run.
Ah, right.
It's as if he's felt, oh, this has been such a good night. These people in Auckland have been so good to us. Let's give them one more song.
In this anonymous city that we're not quite sure where we are, yes.
Yes. And what was the last song on the set list you gave me?
Go on.
The long run.
Ah.
So it was always there.
Right.
And they did a little subterfuge to give us a sense of an impromptu decision. So it kind of, they did it well. They sold it, and I didn't, until I double checked your set list.
That's really interesting. I like that, yeah. I mean, the whole encore thing is a bit of a charade anyway, but we all go through it. But yeah, let's little detail that. But there is, regardless of anything else that happened that night, there was about 7 minutes for which anything can be forgiven.
Right, I know what you're going to say.
Yeah,
it's the song they're most well known for.
It's the only song that was on anyone's t-shirts, wasn't it?
Yes.
This is Those Shoes by Joe Walsh.
<That's right. laughs>
No, I mean, obviously there was a lot of people there solely to hear Hotel California.
Yeah, yeah.
And wasn't it glorious?
It was a great version.
It was. That was absolutely special. Don Henley's voice sounds as good as it did 35, 40 years ago, 45 even, a long time ago. Mm. He still sounds clear.
Mm-hmm.
And are there many things as thrilling as Joe Walsh's play out?
Yeah.
At the end those little triplet runs up the fretboard at the end. It was just I was not the only person who sang along with every single word.
Oh, that, absolutely. Actually, also in the encores, Henley again featured singing Desperado.
Which is sadly, I think, one of the most overrated songs in rock
history.
Yeah,
but they did it quite well. They started off just with piano in his voice.
Okay, yeah.
And that was quite an effective way to do it. And it did seem to catch everyone's attention in the arena. But yes, it's a schmaltzy song.
Oh,
but, but anyway.
But it's one of their biggest hits.
Overall, of all those different bands you saw, did you come away thinking, had you seen the Eagles before?
No, I hadn't.
No, I hadn't either.
My only experience, remember you and I about a year ago, with our ladies, we went to see The Ultimate Eagles.
The Ultimate Eagles.
And I think I possibly enjoyed that show a little bit more, because it felt tighter.
That was a tribute band,
felt tighter. Yeah, but your question was going to be, was I glad I went, basically?
Yes, yeah.
Well, yeah, I think they structured their set list, given that it was 2.5 hours of music. They kept all the good stuff till the end.
Mm, mm.
And as a result, I went out on a high.
Yeah, I think that's probably what most people did. So I think at one point, I think you said could have been 2 or 3 or 4 songs a little lighter would have benefited from it. And I agree with that.
Oh, very definitely.
But I'm glad I saw them. They are one of the bands of our time and we've seen them.
Yeah, and having seen Joe Walsh, I'm really genuinely not sure how much more chance we're going to have to see them. I'm awfully glad we did.
Yeah, and he was sporting a Maori All Blacks cap.
Yes, he was.
Towards the end of the show, a little bit of a connection with the local audience.
Well, it wasn't just an All Blacks cap; it was very specifically a Maori All Blacks.
It was.
Now that shows a little bit of thought. Somebody somewhere, made an effort there.
Yeah.
That impressed.
All right, so the Eagles. You might have some reservations about their music, but they are a famous band, an influential band, a successful band, and I'm glad I saw them.
And I'm awfully glad I went too. Yeah, we'll definitely leave it there.
So that's the Eagles, who most people on the planet have heard of. This next band, Steve, I've heard the name.
Aye.
And
that's about it.
But I know now, both those things.
Yep.
They do very much hail from your part of the world.
Absolutely.
Part of that Manchester scene there. So they weren't the only band emerging from Manchester,
no.
Were they? That sort of late 80s,
early
90s?
Late 80s and 90s, the Manchester scene.
Manchester, right.
Kind of happened. It was the baggy thing. And Tony Wilson and Factory Records were kind of the nexus of all of this.
Right.
And the Happy Mondays were probably the biggest band that was signed to Factory Records.
Okay.
And so they were part of the mythology of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And really, they are the rough.
Okay.
They really are. Singer's name is Sean Ryder. He never could sing. He absolutely can't sing now. But it's not about the vocal harmonies that we were getting at the Eagles. It wasn't that. He's got swagger. He's got bravado. He's a blagger. And he knows it. And he doesn't care.
Right.
But his brother is on bass. His brother Paul plays
right.
bass. And Mark Day on guitar. Those two put together these wonderfully sinewy grooves that Sean sort of meanders around as he sort
right.
of growls into the microphone.
Right.
And that's what makes it a really, really entertaining show.
So I went with you when we just started up on Crave
yeah.
to the power station.
Yes.
We saw Johnny
Ma,
who was from the Smiths.
Correct.
Now, I remember that. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Would the Happy Mondays have in any way evoke that type of music or not really?
I think the only connection really there is if you were in Manchester in the late 80s
yeah.
and you hear a Monday song, it's going to put you in mind of your time in Manchester in the 80s, and then you're going to start thinking of James and the Stone Roses and 808 States and the Charlatans, and then eventually
right.
Smiths will come to mind as well. But no, it's dancing music,
right.
it's music to drop acid to or ecstasy, really, to be fair, if we're being specific about our drugs. It was very much a music of its time. It was referred to as baggy. And the sound itself is not tight. It's very loose.
Yeah.
It's very
a bit rough and ready.
Oh yeah, you can sort of your limbs flailing around as you're listening to it. The first really big hit was actually a cover version of a song called Step On, and I have a video of that that's going to go up on the website. I'll put it in with this video.
Cool.
Give it a look, because
okay.
you also get to see one of the most amazing sights in Manchester music is Bez.
Okay,
Bez is their dancer. And the man can't dance to save his life.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. He's Sean's best mate. He dances around the stage, waving his maracas, and that's it. He's a complete gibbon. He really is. There's no pretense about it at all.
Okay.
And I did, if you go back and look on earlier episodes, I did an interview with Roetta, their singer, and she was fantastic.
Right.
She's got an amazing voice. She's a powerful singer. And I did a lovely about 20-minute interview over the phone with her back in January. And the following night, I did a phone interview with Bez, and I've never published it because it's incoherent. He's a lovely bloke, but he was,
if you can understand what he's saying.
Well, I struggled at times. I mean, to be fair, he was on the motorway up to Manchester and he was breaking out a little bit. But he was more interested in talking about beekeeping and beer making than he was about the music.
Right, right.
I couldn't keep him on track. He's a lovely bloke.
Oh.
He really is. But half the fun of a Happy Mondays concert is watching Bez bouncing around the stage like a Tigger.
And having read your review on CravePodcast.com, yeah. The other thing that struck me about the show that you went to was it sounded like you felt like you were almost at home because in the crowd there were it felt like a few other Salford accents were there.
I was not the only Northerner in the room, mate, I'll tell you that. Seriously. There was one lad as I walked in, he was wearing a t-shirt from a festival I went to in Heaton Park in Manchester in August of 91. This is like 2 months before I left England. Of course, Cities in the Park, and the Happy Mondays played that one. I didn't see him. That was the second night. I saw the first night when the Wonder Stuff were there, and I was thinking, this is my youth. I'm with my people. I'm with my kind.
Yes.
I just felt, and then you know, Shaw Ryder comes out on stage and starts talking like, you know, he's from Little Alton, just up the road from us, right? I'm from Eccles. He's from Swindon, Little Alton. And I'm thinking, yeah, this is my people. This is I'm with my own kind. It was fantastic.
Oh, that's great.
So I regressed a little bit.
It was quite rightly so.
No, I mean, really, to be absolutely honest, right? On one level, it was rubbish. The music. Shaun Ryder cannot sing, but then he never could.
Right. And he lived up to his expectations, then.
Exactly. And it was billed as the Pills and Thrills and Bellyaches tour because that was their big breakout album.
Okay.
Because their first album, if I remember it correctly, is called Squirrel and G-Man, 24-Hour Party People, Plastic Face, Can't Smile, brackets, Whiteout, close brackets.
Okay.
Doesn't want the trouble at the top, but the second album was called Pills and Thrills and Bellyaches. And it was a big breakthrough album, and they said, we're going to play this in its entirety. And so I got the set list, and that was it. They played that. And then there were three songs listed for the encore.
Okay.
And they played two of them.
Oh.
So it was an hour and change.
Oh, that's quite a short and sharp show.
It was brisk.
Brisk.
It was brisk. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, to be fair, there were moments when Shaun Ryder wasn't singing, when Paul Ryder and Mark Day were sort of, like I say, sort of weaving around each other a little bit, and you're thinking, there's actually some seriously good music going on here.
Right.
And they did a couple of extended jams and threw a couple of songs as well to spin it out. So it was worth listening to.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm awfully glad I went.
Fantastic. Happy Mondays.
And now I don't need to ever see him again.
Great. Great. Everybody.
I'm trying to think of a less similar band or artist, and here's what I know of John Prine.
Okay.
Right? Second best band ever to come out of Canada.
Oh.
The Cowboy Junkies.
Ah. Okay.
Second only to the Tragically Hip.
Right.
And I will fight to the death anyone who argues with that.
Okay. Okay.
And they released in 1992 an album called Black Eyed Man.
Right.
And John Prine was a guest vocalist on one song.
Ah.
He does a duet with Margot Timmins.
Okay.
And even then, this is back in 92, even then he was starting to sound a little bit
yeah,
wobbly and a bit
yeah,
whiny.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking 30 years on from that, what does he sound like now?
Well, he's 72 now, John Prine. Right, yeah. He does not have, if he didn't have a melodic voice then, he doesn't now.
No, even, melodic's not a word that comes to mind.
Well, even more so because he's had some serious health battles.
Yes, he has, hasn't he? Yeah.
So he, you won't have to search very far to realise he's, I think, had two battles with cancer, one in his throat. So when he walked on stage, he doesn't look that well.
No.
His face is a little bit bloated.
Yes.
And I think because of the cancer on one side, maybe it's weakened the muscles. So his head is kind of tilted over.
Do you know, I was looking at the photographs that Meg's Moss did for the concert. I was looking, they all looked like it was...
He was definitely favouring it like this.
I was wondering if that was a fair reading. Is that...
Absolutely. He was pretty much that the whole time.
Right.
He's a little bit overweight around the tummy, a little bit stiff-legged as he walks. And you're thinking...
72 years old.
72, and he's had some hard times. What's he going to sound like? And the cancer did apparently affect some of the parts of the neck, which affected his vocal cords. So it is a little, it's a gravelly voice.
Did it also affect his tongue as well?
Yes, yes, it did.
So for a singer,
yeah,
this is a tough blow, isn't
it? He's a tough nut.
Yeah.
And one of the truly remarkable things about this, he's known as a wordsmith.
Yes.
He writes some their country songs. Country folk songs, and the lyrics are that sort of genre of writing, but they're very detailed, and he sang, despite his physical limitations, very clearly.
Okay.
You could hear what he was saying.
Ooh.
And in a folk music type concert,
that's
absolutely
a big deal,
yes. Essential.
That might
yes.
Because I'm thinking of famous 70-ish year old folk singers that we've seen recently where you couldn't make out a single word that was being sung.
So, I wasn't familiar with the songs, really.
Right, right.
But you'd call it, musically it's not unsurprising. It's a folk with some sort of bluesy influences and country influences. There's nothing fresh about that.
Yeah.
But his lyrics are great.
Yeah.
And I thought I should just very, very quickly...
You've got something printed out there.
Well,
so share it.
I mean, I put a little bit on the website, but...
you did, didn't you?
That was just a little... taster, and it's all about the detail, I guess, and the characters of growing up in the South. Someone who really yearns for the country, rural life, spurns the city,
right?
And the sort of the values of country life sort of are dear to him.
Okay, yeah.
The environment is clearly dear to him, and there's a few references here and there in the lyrics to the indigenous Americans, and so forth. Grandpa was a carpenter. Grandpa wore his suit to dinner nearly every day. No particular reason. He just dressed that way. Brown necktie and a matching vest and both his wingtip shoes. He built a closet on our back porch and put a penny in a burned out fuse.
Beautiful.
So it's lovely. Just a lovely lilting,
really
detail.
Really simple.
Simple, but it paints a picture.
It's the penny in the burnt out fuse. That level of detail is fantastic.
So I really enjoyed the songs.
Yeah.
We often say when we review bands that they had a great backing band.
Yeah.
They were really good. They were really good. There were four of them, and they had a superb lead guitarist. I'm going to mention the names. Jason Wilbur was on lead guitar, and he was on supporting vocals. A chap with a wonderful name, Fats Kaplan.
Outstanding.
Who was quite slim.
Okay.
But a moustache that goes like this.
Oh, cool.
Twirly, twirly moustache. Played pedal steel, and he played mandolin and violin and a bit of rhythm guitar. He was...
Okay, just the list of instruments you rattled off then tells us a lot about the concert, doesn't it?
Yeah, a superb bass player and a superb drum player, and they were really, really good. But the thing that spoke most about this guy was something that I didn't expect, and I don't know what he does it all the time in his concerts.
This is going to be a reference to the title you gave to your review that
it
really
is.
Confused me until I read it.
Yes. Towards the end of the set, he was standing at the microphone. He took off his acoustic guitar, laid it down on the floor, and proceeded to do a dance around the guitar.
So this is a frail and sickly old man?
Yeah. Yeah, well, apparently.
Mm.
But the music charged his soul, I guess, and he actually moved. It looked like it evoked what you might think an indigenous American dance might be.
So this could go one of two ways. It could be either very moving and affecting or profoundly hokey.
Yes, and it was the former.
Good.
It was something, you just felt he was paying respects to this culture he was singing about.
Right.
It felt like he was allowing himself, letting himself go.
Yeah.
Just, I'm just, this is... this is what I feel is appropriate to do at this time, and here I go. And everyone, the response was interesting. I mean, you could have reacted and go, "Oh, is it cringy worthy or with worthy?" But no, it just felt good. It really felt good.
I guess if he's earned the respect of the audience for everything you're telling me,
yeah,
he sounds like he did.
I think he did. I think he definitely did.
So we've got a respect for the land.
Yes.
And we've got a respect for the indigenous people. How well does this play in New Zealand?
Well, exactly. Very well.
Yeah.
Very, very well.
So were you alone in not being familiar with his work?
I got the feeling that most of the people there were very familiar, actually.
Oh, okay.
And the people were calling out, give us this song, give us that song.
Oh, right.
In fact, I think he must have felt he was in a room where there was great affection for him.
Oh, that would be a nice feeling.
Which was a lovely feeling, I think. I felt remiss not to have caught up with this artist earlier in my life, but I'm very glad I've caught up with him now.
And are you putting this right?
Well, I think that I should purchase an album or two. He's been quite prolific. He's been churning out albums for decades.
Oh, really?
Okay. Going back to the 70s.
Wow.
80s, 90s, 2000s. So he's... And the latest album, the one that he's touring, is called The Tree of Forgiveness.
Oh.
Lovely. So, it's good. Very good. Highly recommended.
It stayed off our radar all this time.
Yeah. Again, I would have seen that name here and there, but not really, really brutally, honestly stopped and actually probably delved into it prior to this. But particularly if you're into sort of folk music at all,
he's
your man.
Excellent.
Yeah. So there we go.
I shall definitely give that. I shall look further. I shall start off by digging out my old Cowboy Junkies, and then we'll take it from there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So listen, I think we've done.
Yeah,
we've done music, haven't we?
Yeah, good run.
So what's left?
Well, last time we were here, you and I spent a bit of time sorting out our own selections for the Oscars, which took place just a week or so back.
So what we need to do now is go back, re-edit that to make it sound like we called them all.
That's right.
But there's one that no one called. And I think we need to kick off with that, don't
we? Yeah, we do. I mean, we both enjoyed Green Book.
We did.
It's an immensely enjoyable film. Two great lead performances.
Very engaging.
Engaging, mostly in a comic sort of a level, but with an underlying serious theme about the racial South. Yep. Neither you nor I picked it as best film.
In fact, I think I possibly even dismissed it as not totally sure why it's there.
Yeah. But it did win best film.
It did win best film.
Now, why do we think that is, Steve?
Glad you asked. there is the obvious cynical take, isn't there?
Well, I suppose, yes, if you're a cynic, you might say, was it the sort of the safest or less...
They finally realised that they have to recognise the blacks.
Yes.
And there were three very, very, very... Well, two very black films and one somewhat black film in the nominees for best film.
Actually, you know what? There are four.
What's the fourth?
It was Black Panther.
Yeah, there's the obvious one.
If Beale Street Could Talk.
Was not nominated for Best Picture.
I'm sorry, I'm thinking of the Best Supporting Actress, which...
Yes, you are Regina King.
My apologies.
Yes. Yeah, so...
Okay.
So there was Black Panther, Black Klansman, and there was Green Book.
Right.
So...
Yes.
So like I say, they finally figured out that you can't just keep ignoring all these fantastic black performances.
No, not at all.
So clearly, it's time for a black film to win.
Mm.
So which one's the least black of all? Which one's the safest for a white audience?
Well, that's an interesting point because... Because that's almost an argument for Black Panther, because although it was almost an all-black cast, it was a superhero movie in many ways. And so that's a genre well-established.
Yes.
Where you could say,
but it took superhero movies in a direction that had never been before.
No,
did something really interesting.
It
with
did,
them.
But yeah, well,
and unless,
Black Klansman was a very, very good film, a cutting edge black comedy
in every possible sense of the word. Yes,
and maybe not. I'm clicking my button. Yes, not. It wasn't going to please everyone, but
no,
I don't know.
If you are as less enlightened than maybe we need to be these days, let's face it, you're going to find a film like Black Klansman to be a little bit confronting and challenging, which is possibly not a bad thing, to be fair, but it wasn't easy.
No.
It will have made a lot of people very, very uncomfortable, and that's not an entirely bad thing.
No, not at all.
But it will also have possibly pooched their chances of of glory.
I wonder, you know, Steve, we talk about this, the academy that votes on these things. I think it's about 7,000 or 8,000 people.
Yeah. And when I'm still waiting for my invitation,
quite right. I'm surprised. And when it comes to the best film nominees, all of the people in the Academy vote.
Yes.
And I do wonder, because you hear stories of the production company spending millions promoting these films.
Oh, yeah.
So what do? Do they take the Academy out to swanky nightclubs and dinners and wine and dine them? Or?
They must do.
I mean, I
don't know what you can do. I mean, basically what you're suggesting is bribery.
It is.
And it's probably what they do, really.
Yeah, but then how does a view form amongst the voting members of the Academy? Do they all get together in dark-filled rooms and compare notes, or do they do it over email? Or at these swanky parties, maybe they'll rub shoulders and say, what do you think of this, and what do you think of that? And,
yeah. I get the feeling you and I will never know. you're probably not a million miles off the mark, to be fair. So Green Book was safe, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And I remember the thing you mentioned and you put to me in our chat about Green Book was that issue where the Viggo Mortensen's character is almost telling Mahershala Ali that he's not black enough.
Yes.
And you, as you rightly said, that's kind of, well, what's going on there? Why should a white man be telling a black man how to be black?
And that's exactly what was going on, yes.
Yeah.
That's kind of what made me a bit uncomfortable about it. And obviously, it's the fact that it was written by Tony's...
Yes.
Tony, what was the guy? I can't remember the fact. Villalonga.
Yeah, Villalonga.
His little boy, Nick, was a co-writer on it. So obviously, it's always going to depict Tony in a really good light, and it's very definitely got that sort of I'm going to teach you how to be what you are, and we're since hearing that apparently the relationship it depicted of Don Shirley with his own family was completely false. And the Shirley family have come out and said no, he was not estranged from us,
right?
And so yeah, it was based on a true story
with some dramatic license,
hell of a lot,
and
dramatic license which is done in such a way as to make the white character look like the saviour of the black character, and it made a lot of people very, very queasy.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that though, Steve. I don't want to relitigate that entire discussion about the Green Book, but really I thought about what you said, and something about it didn't quite sit right with me, and I've been trying to figure it out why. But really, the fact that Tony didn't think Don Shirley was white enough was as much to do with his manner, his level of education, he was quite as genteel, he wasn't rough and tough, he wasn't going to ever get in a fist fight, he was well educated, he didn't fit Tony's stereotype of a black man. So in a way, by Tony reinforcing that, wasn't that just showing up his own prejudice?
No, because he never challenged that. In fact, if you remember the way it plays out, what's the big redemption scene at the end? How does Don Shirley become the black man that Tony thinks he should become?
I know what you're going to say. You're going to say when he takes the stage with that black sort of honky-tonk band.
When he finally, basically, remembers his place.
Yeah, no, see, I would almost agree with that, but the character of Tony also grew to appreciate the other music that Don Shirley was playing.
A little, yes.
And was telling his wife about how good he was and so forth. So I don't think it's entirely that.
No.
But I know what you're saying. No, it smacks of...
It's a complex film.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't... It's not always completely easy. I mean, Black Klansman, no one's ever going to be left in any doubt what message that film's trying to say.
That's right.
It's pretty explicit.
Yes.
Whereas it depends on how much goodwill Green Book generated in you, how you're going to read it.
Yeah, that's true.
And
anyway, in a way, a surprising best film in some ways, because it didn't feel like a... Even though it was a serious film, it wasn't really a serious film. It wasn't a weighty film.
No, it wasn't. It was quite lightweight. It was fun.
Yeah.
Well, let's try one. Best actress.
Well, you saw Olivia Colman in The Favourite.
She was the best thing in it.
Yeah.
But it was a weird film.
Yeah, I remember you saying.
Yeah. Best actor?
Well, I enjoyed Rami Malek's performance as Freddie Mercury. I don't know. For me, it wasn't I know he was, I think, touted as a likely winner.
Yeah.
I
was it an acting turn or was it an impersonation? Kind of went either way.
Yeah, so, either way.
I don't think we're going to get any word of objection from you for Regina King for Best Actress.
Actually, well, she was very,
best
very good.
Supporting actress.
Best supporting though. Actress. But actually, Maria, and her second name has just gone out of my head, who played the wife in Roma.
Yes.
She was very, very good, I thought.
Right.
And she would have been a worthy winner of the Best Supporting Actress. I would have been happy with either of those two.
Yeah.
And then... Best Supporting Actor. Ah, we both were quite keen on our good friend from with Melissa McCarthy, weren't we? Richard E. Grant was going to do well, but
no,
in the end,
I think basically anyone who saw their name alongside Mahershala Ali was also thinking, I think I'll stay at home tonight, because he was pretty much guaranteed to win there.
I know he was. He was winning all the other awards, so
he was awfully good.
So I think, you know, apart from Green Book, we weren't too far off the money, really. I'd like to say.
Well, I don't think anyone called Green Book, did they?
No.
To be fair, that one did catch people out quite spectacularly.
Anyway,
so that's looking back, isn't it?
Yes, let's look forward.
Let's look forward. So what have we got coming up? We've got a couple of things coming up, actually. To be fair,
okay.
Where should we go? I'm looking back and seeing what we've got. We've got a couple of cancellations.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Well, cancellation and a postponement.
Okay.
John Farnham.
Yes.
Was meant to be coming to town.
Yep.
And he's had to beg off.
Mm-hmm.
Ozzy Osbourne.
Oh, I remember you mentioning him in the past, yes.
Yes, you may have heard of him. Meant to be coming to town, again, had to beg off.
Right.
Are you familiar with the Raconteurs?
I'm not familiar with their music. I've heard that name around the traps, but no.
Yeah, they're going to be in town in April,
mm-hmm.
where we're looking. They're going to be at the Power Station on Tuesday the 16th. But all of this is as background noise.
Oh, okay. Do tell.
Oh, you know what's coming. Because I texted you.
Yes.
And that was the reaction I got from you. We were other ends of Auckland,
yes!
And I heard you go squee. I've never seen you fanboy about anything quite as much as Little Stephen and the Disciples of Soul, who are going to be in Auckland on the 27th of April.
April, was it?
Saturday.
So this is Little Stephen Van Zandt, Miami Steve, as he's called by Bruce Springsteen.
I was going to say, is he probably more famous?
He's pretty famous.
Would I have heard of him?
Oh, he's been a bit of a sidekick to Mr. Springsteen for about 40 years.
Would I have seen him in anything?
You might have seen him in The Sopranos, perhaps, and...
I mean, we even get a Norwegian title.
We do. Oh, that's right, because he played another sort of reformed crook, didn't he?
Yeah.
Who was sent to Norway to
Witness protection program in Lillehammer.
Lillehammer, that's
right. And it was fantastic because somehow the character couldn't speak a single word of Norwegian and yet understood everybody else around him speaking fluent Norwegian with English subtitles. And there's Little Stephen who's just speaking... New York. didn't quite work.
He's playing at the Town Hall, I think. Is that
Auckland,
right?
Auckland Town Hall, yeah.
That's an interesting choice.
Tiny venue.
Yeah. I would have thought he'd fill out a bit larger venue. Anyway,
we'll see. He's going to be there, yeah. So,
fantastic.
So he's going to have a full band with him.
Mm. I think this band, he's been touring in the States for at least a year now, maybe more, I think.
Yeah, it says powerful 14-piece band.
Yeah.
Bringing their critically acclaimed soul-infused rock and roll soul fire show.
I'll be there.
I know you will. Yeah, seriously, I texted you and I got a reply back within about 30 seconds. OMG. So that's the big
one. Okay, yes.
Deep breath, Simon.
Deep breath. Okay. Okay, good.
Yeah. And like you say, nothing else matters.
No. I should just quickly mention we're now into March.
We are indeed.
And just we're into that season when you're going to go, oh my God, not again. But we're in that superhero movie season again.
Oh, not again.
Yes. So I think there are Marvels cranking them out.
Of course, that's always what Marvel does.
So Captain Marvel comes out, I think, in a week or a few days.
Marvelous.
And then I think within a few weeks after that, the second Avengers film from...
Have they not avenged anything yet?
It's taking them a while, isn't it?
What still needs avenging?
Oh, the universe or something?
In the meantime, Captain Marvel, isn't there something somewhat remarkable about Captain Marvel? What have I got this wrong?
There's a few things about her. She.
That's the first thing, right? Yeah, there, isn't her. It? Yes.
To her.
You don't get many of those, do you?
No. She. Yes. Yeah, so this is. In a way, she's almost like Marvel's Wonder Woman.
Yes.
Character in sort of a way. Yes. Equivalent thereof.
I think. Is it the first female-led superhero from the Marvel Universe?
As a film. I think it is.
Yeah. Sorry, yes, that's what I meant.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Yes. So there we are. Sorry, I just mentioned that in passing. But it's been a good musical week.
It is. This.
I think it's not a bad... Eagles, Happy Mondays, and John Prine is about as a mixed lot of...
A Catholic selection.
I don't know.
A Catholic selection. Yes, right, yes. There. That'll do quite nicely.
And you said this coming week we've got... Red Hot Chili Peppers
on Friday,
and I think on Thursday maybe Brian Ferry. I know he's in town anyway.
Brian Ferry's coming on Thursday, and then the Arctic Monkeys are going to be in town on Wednesday.
Goodness
and
me!
And I believe you and I will be at the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I'm glad to hear it.
Absolutely. Okay. I think that's going to be the highlight of the week, okay, musically speaking.
Okay. Well, look, that is us for another week.
And
if you would like to get in touch with us, we'd be very pleased to hear from you. You can email Steve and I at podcast@cravepodcast.com.
You can find us on Facebook or on Twitter. We're at Crave Podcast.
It's a cunning Twitter handle, that.
It is. It's devious.
No one would guess. No. Anyway, for now, I'm Simon Mercer.
I'm Steve McCabe.
That's what's been entertaining us this week.
Very good. Stop hitting the table.
I know, I can't help myself.
Seriously.